Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If the teachings and audios you find here at BethEmmanuel.org are a blessing to you, please consider supporting Beth Emmanuel with a gift, or become a member of our virtual congregation by becoming a regular contributor. To learn how to contribute, click on the Donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
In Galatians chapter 4, where we are studying, Paul offers us a parable. It is actually a midrash, in which he briefly retells the story of Sarah and Hagar, these two wives of Abraham, and the story of the birth of their children, Isaac and Ishmael. And he uses that story from the Torah, to illustrate his argument against the influencers in Galatia. And we've learned about these influencers in past weeks. They are those who were encouraging the Gentile believers to undergo circumcision and become Jewish. Yes, we've learned all that. Anyway, so Paul is illustrating his argument against them with this story about Sarah and Hagar and Isaac and Ishmael. And from a traditional Christian interpretation, this passage is straightforward. Paul himself actually offers the interpretation. He says, in Galatians 4, he says, the two women are two covenants. One from Mount Sinai, it would be the old covenant, and the other one from Jerusalem above. So in other words, Hagar, the slave girl, represents the old covenant, that is the Torah and Judaism. Sarah represents the new covenant, hence the two covenants, by which we mean the gospel and Christianity. Hagar's children, the Jews, are then slaves, whereas Sarah's children, the Christians, are the free peoples. And what does Scripture say? But in verse 30 it says, cast out the bondwoman and her son. The son of the bondwoman shall not be an heir with the son of the free woman. And this prevailing interpretation of the passage has been the prevailing interpretation of the passage since the second century, which is a long, long time. So the message is very simple. Let me sum it up for you. Judaism, bad. Christianity, good. That's how it's understood. That's how it's taught. We can go a little further than that. Torah equals slavery. Gospel equals freedom. And we can extrapolate a little bit more. Jews are slaves. Christians are free. That's how this passage that we're about to read has been understood, taught, explained, practiced, put into implementation. Therefore, if a Jewish or Gentile believer observes the Torah, that person will be considered to be taking on this yoke of slavery and ignoring Paul's admonishment to cast out the bondwoman, that is the Torah, and her son, that is the Jewish people. For the son of the bondwoman, that is the Jewish people, shall not be an heir with the son of the free woman, that is the Christians. So this is how Christianity has explained the passage. There is one problem with this interpretation, one small problem with the interpretation of this passage. You know what it is? It's wrong. That's what it is. It's wrong. So turn with me, Galatians 4:21. We're going to read it. We're going to learn it. We're going to learn it together. We'll work through it verse by verse. Galatians 4:21. Paul says, tell me, you who desire to be under the law, under the Torah, do you not listen to the law? Do you not listen to the Torah? And we've learned in previous weeks, as we've been studying through Galatians, we've learned that Paul uses this term, under the law, under the Torah, to refer to someone who is Jewish, or to refer to a Gentile who has become Jewish, legally, halakhically, through conversion. So when Paul says, you who want to be under the law, he actually is referring to the Galatian Gentile God-fearers to whom he's writing the letter, who are planning on going through this ritual conversion to become Jewish. And so Paul challenges them, saying, okay, oh, okay, you want to be Jewish. Okay, all right. You guys who want to be Jewish and come under the law, that's fine. You want to come under the Torah. But don't you know what the Torah says about this? And he says, for it is written, Abraham had two sons, one by a slave woman and one by a free woman. And you might think, how is that relevant whatsoever to the context, to the discussion, to the argument? In other words, what are you talking about, Paul? And the answer is, it is relevant because the Galatians are considering conversion, and when a Gentile converts and becomes Jewish, well, maybe you knew this because we practice this, maybe you knew this, he takes on the last name, he gets a new name. When a Gentile becomes Jewish, you take a Hebrew name, right? You take a Hebrew name, and so, I mean, your name might be Bob Smith, or is it John Smith, that's what it is. John Smith, your name might be John Smith, but when you convert, your name becomes, you take a Hebrew name. It becomes Nathaniel Ben Avraham. Always Ben Avraham. That's the last name, Ben Avraham. You always get the same last name. You can take any first name you want, but you always get the same last name. So a convert is always called a Ben Avraham, a son of Abraham. Ben Avraham. Or, alternatively, a girl, a Bat Avraham, right? Daughter of Abraham. You always get the same last name. It's an indicator. That's what a convert is called. They're called B'nai Avraham. The converts, the Gentiles who become Jewish are called B'nai Avraham, sons of Abraham. That's how it works in the synagogue world. So the Galatians are trying to achieve this status by becoming sons of Abraham. Yes, they want to enter the family of Abraham. They want to join the family of Abraham. They want to become part of the family. Ben Avraham. So in Paul's world, a Ben Avraham is a convert. Okay, got it. Because now he's going to go on to contrast two different types of B'nai Avraham, two different types of converts, two types of sons of Abraham. In other words, two different types of Gentile proselytes that convert to Judaism, so to speak. All right. Stop. This is important because the first thing we observe is that he is actually not contrasting Jews and Christians, is he? He is contrasting, neither is he contrasting Jews and Gentiles. He's not talking about Jews at all, actually. He's using this Ishmael-Isaac analogy to contrast Gentiles and Gentiles. Yeah, two different types of Gentiles. Two different types of converts. Okay, so here's what he says. He says, verse 22, it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by the bondwoman and one by the free woman. Now, just, I don't know if you know the story or not, Hagar and Sarah, I hope you know the story. It's from the Torah. Hagar is the bondwoman because she is Sarah's maidservant, and when Sarah can't have a baby, she has this idea. She's waiting for God's promises to be fulfilled. She wants to have a baby. It's been like 100 years or something. I don't know. She's been trying to have a baby. So she gives up, and she says to Abraham, look, God promised to give us a baby, but it's not happening. So here, why don't you take my servant girl and marry her, and that'll be, and then she can have a baby, and I can adopt it. It'll be my baby. And so she does this, and it doesn't work out because it does work out, and she gets jealous, and the servant girl starts to get, well, she gets a little uppity with Sarah. Sarah's like, wash the dishes. She says, I don't think so. I'm Abraham's wife now. You wash the dishes. I'm the one having a baby. And so she gets distressed about this, and she goes to Abraham and says, what are you doing to me? And he says, it's your servant girl. This is your idea. And so, eventually Ishmael's born, but then later, God does keep the original promise he had made, and Isaac is born. So you end up with two sons, two women. That's what Paul's talking about. This is a quick recap of the story. Anyway, Abraham had two sons, one by the bondwoman, that would be Hagar, and one by the free woman, that would be Sarah. Hagar is the bondwoman, Sarah, the free woman. And it says, the son of the slave was born according to the flesh, while the son of the free woman was born through promise. Okay, what does it mean to be born according to the flesh? Have any of you ever been born according to the flesh? What does it mean to be born according to the flesh? Well, according to the flesh means physically. So when you read according to the flesh anywhere in the Bible, think physically. This is important. The flesh, when it talks about the flesh in the Bible, it doesn't mean sin, and it doesn't mean badness. It means physically, bodily. So it says Abraham, or it says the son of the slave was born according to the flesh. What does it mean? It means physically. Abraham and Hagar conceived Ishmael by natural, physical means, according to the flesh. Abraham and Sarah conceived Isaac, however, through a supernatural miracle, because she was way past the age of childbearing, way past. So it says they conceived Isaac through a promise. That's what it said, right? The son of the free woman was born through a promise. Okay. What promise? Think back. Think. What promise? Think. You know, we've been doing Galatians a long time. It's maybe hard to think all the way back to chapter 3, but most of chapter 3 was dedicated to the subject of the promise. Paul equates the promise with the whole gospel message. So look at it. Chapter 3, verse 8. The promise is, in 3 verse 8, it says, and the scripture, the Torah, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, in you shall all nations be blessed. And then again in verse 16, now the promises were made to Abraham and to his offspring. It does not say, and to offsprings. It does not say to seeds, referring to many, but referring to one, and to your offspring, who is Christ, the Messiah. So the promise, what is the promise? The promise, here it is, the promise, all nations will be blessed in Abraham's seed, the Messiah. That's it. That's the promise, the Abrahamic promise that Paul equates with the whole gospel, at least his gospel, the inclusion of the Gentiles. Isaac, he says, was born according to this promise. How so? Well, Abraham didn't have a seed. He didn't have a seed. Well, there was Ishmael, but that's a different story. I mean, it was supposed to come through Sarah. The promise was supposed to come through Sarah. So, he has this baby, Isaac, through Sarah. And that's what God promised. Abraham believed. Abraham believed, it says, and God counted it to him as righteousness. And Isaac was born as a result of this promise. Ishmael, on the other hand, was born as a result of Abraham going to Hagar and attempting to fulfill the promise himself. He was born as the result of a normal physical process, the way a son is born, by human physical efforts. That's the contrast Paul's making. Two sons, Abraham had two sons, one born according to the flesh, naturally, the other born according to the promise. And so here he goes in verse 24, he says, this may be interpreted allegorically, midrashically. this may be interpreted as a midrash. These women are two covenants. Two covenants. What are the two covenants? Christian interpretation, it's Old Covenant versus New Covenant. Old Covenant versus New Covenant. Gospel versus Torah. Judaism versus Christianity. Right? I mean, that is just so self-evident. Two covenants. That is so self-evident, but it's wrong. It is not New Covenant, Old Covenant. What is the context here? I mean, we've been reading Galatians for a long time. We've been studying Galatians for a long time. What is the context? Well, one is the old, he tells us Torah, Sinai covenant. That is the old covenant. That's one of them. But the other one is the even older covenant, the covenant he made with Abraham. Look, it's back in chapter 3. Go back to 3. Look at verse 16. Says the promises were made to Abraham and his offspring. Does not say to seeds referring to many, but referring to one. And to your seed, who is the Messiah. This is what I mean. The Torah, which came 430 years after, does not annul a covenant previously ratified by God so as to make it no longer void. For if the inheritance comes by the Torah, it no longer comes by the promise. But God gave it to Abraham by a promise. Do you see the contrast? Context dictates we are talking about two covenants. One is the Abrahamic covenant, and the other is the covenant at Sinai. Abraham had two sons, one born by the promise, that would be the Abrahamic covenant. The other, according to the flesh, would be the Sinai covenant. Hagar is Sinai. Covenant at Sinai. Sarah is the covenant with Abraham, the promise, which came first, which is older, which cannot be replaced by a covenant made 430 years later, just like Hagar does not replace Sarah. And this totally changed. I hope you get this. I hope you understand how critical this is. You know, this is You might think, well, you know, whatever. This is not whatever, my friends. We've seen this all the way through this book, that passage by passage by passage has been fundamentally misunderstood. That the entire course of Christian history has hinged upon a misreading of this book. Empires, nations, wars, based upon a misreading of these things. It's not whatever. This totally changes the interpretation of this passage, at least. It overturns the Christian replacement theology. It overturns anti-Torah theology. It overturns anti-Judaism. It's so simple. It's so obvious when we read it from a Jewish perspective. Verse 24, he says, is that where we are? Verse 24, yeah. He says, this may be interpreted allegorically. These two women are two covenants. One is from Mount Sinai bearing children for slavery. She's Hagar. Now Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia. She corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. Hagar, the slave girl, Mount Sinai, represents Torah and bears children for slavery. Jewish people, right? I mean, that's wrong. Not the Jewish people. Anyone who keeps the Torah? Yeah, anyone who maybe keeps? No. What's the context? What are we working on? Two types of B'nai Avraham, sons of Abraham, two types of proselytes. Two different types of Gentile believers, actually. The children that Hagar is giving birth to, who are born by natural means, who are these? These are proselytes. According to the flesh. Gentiles going through a legal, physical conversion. That's what we're talking about. That's all that we're talking about. Paul compares these converts to Ishmael, the son of Hagar, because there is nothing miraculous about the way that they have entered the family of Abraham. They have entered the family of Abraham. They have become sons of Abraham, but they have done so through natural means. In another passage, he calls it the circumcision of the flesh. According to the flesh. The circumcision made with hands, he calls it, to contrast that not made with hands. According to the flesh. So yes, it makes them B'nai Avraham. They are sons of Abraham. Just as Ishmael was the son of Abraham too, you know. He's a real son of Abraham. Converting and going under the Torah, under the law, becoming legally Jewish, makes you a legitimate son of Abraham. Ishmael style. Even Ishmael was a son of Abraham, but a son of a slave, so to speak, the son of the slave girl, second behind Isaac. It's sort of a second class status, Paul is saying. Why does Paul say that Hagar is Sinai in Arabia, corresponding to Jerusalem? And he says this, he says Jerusalem is in slavery with her children. It would make you think, oh, well, this is, you know, Jerusalem, the Jewish people, and so on and so forth. No, we're talking about proselytes. Who are her children? They are proselytes. And when a Gentile would become Jewish, legally, in that day, he would become accountable to the legal authority of the sages in the same way that if a Gentile becomes Jewish today, he becomes accountable to the legal authority of the sages. But in those days, the sages were in Jerusalem. There was a Sanhedrin, which adjudicated Jewish law. So if you're a Gentile believer and you're becoming Jewish, you place yourself under rabbinic authority. Paul doesn't see this as necessarily a good idea for Gentile believers. Why? Because in Paul's day, just like in our own day, those lawmakers were not always friendly towards believers. But Paul's point is, if you Galatians become Jewish, you're under the authority of Jerusalem, Jerusalem below. You'll be under the authority of the Sanhedrin. Verse 26, but the Jerusalem above is free, and she is our mother. So Sarah represents the promises of the Abrahamic covenant corresponds to Jerusalem above, the future new Jerusalem. Paul says, she is our mother Sarah. Note that he says, our mother, not your mother. He doesn't say, she is your mother. He says, she is our mother. Why? Because New Jerusalem is the future city of both Jewish and Gentile believers. So why does Paul compare Sarah to New Jerusalem? Well, that's easy. Turn to Isaiah 54. He goes on with a proof text. He quotes Isaiah 54, verse 1. Isaiah 54, you probably remember, we read it as the Haftarah portion for Noach. We read it as the Haftarah portion for Kitetze. And we read it as the Haftarah portion for... One other time. So you read this passage three times during the liturgical year. Isaiah 54 is this prophecy addressed to the city of Jerusalem, which predicts the final messianic redemption, the ingathering of all the Jewish people, the building of messianic Jerusalem, the advent of New Jerusalem, and the world to come. And in this chapter, Jerusalem is in ruins and is depicted as a barren woman. And the prophet is speaking to this barren woman, Jerusalem. And this woman thinks that she's barren. She thinks that all her children are gone. That they're gone, but they're just in exile. And so at the time of the redemption, they all come back in the ingathering. And she realizes, wow, where'd all these children come from? And so the prophet tells her, you're going to have to expand your tent to fit all these people, right? And so, in the Midrash, this barren woman is compared to Sarah. You know, Sarah's the barren woman. But we're actually talking about Jerusalem. So Paul follows this traditional interpretation of making Sarah symbolic for the new Jerusalem that is described in Isaiah 54. And he doesn't actually quote the whole chapter, but rabbinic style, he just gives us the first verse, and you're supposed to know the rest of the chapter. Because you hear it three times a year in the synagogue, right? So you're supposed to know the rest of it. So you just, all he has to do is say the first verse, and you go, oh yeah, I know that. Oh, okay, you're right. Sarah represents Jerusalem, New Jerusalem. You got it. So, sing, O barren one who did not bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud, you who have not been in labor. For the children of the desolate one will be more than the children of her who is married, says the Lord. Enlarge the place of your tent. Let the curtains of your habitation be stretched out. Don't hold back. Lengthen your cords. Strengthen your stakes. You will spread abroad to the right and to the left, and your seed will possess the nations and will people the desolate cities. Ah, that's it. You remember. Now to Paul, and to all the apostles, I would think, this prophecy is really relevant, not just because of the beautiful things it has to say, but also because of its position in the book of Isaiah. Do you know why? You got it open, don't you? You're looking at Isaiah 54, verse 1, right now. Let your eyes travel back. And what comes right before Isaiah 54? Isaiah 53 comes right before Isaiah 54. What is Isaiah 53? It is the suffering servant. It is a prophecy of the suffering of Messiah. It is the most important text in the Tanakh for the apostles. Surely he has borne our griefs, carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, afflicted, wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him the chastisement that brought us peace, and by his wounds, by his stripes, we are healed. The result of Yeshua's death and resurrection, his crucifixion and his resurrection, as described in Isaiah 53, is the redemption. The result of his suffering is Isaiah 54. The redemption, New Jerusalem, the Jerusalem above. You have to have all this to go back to Galatians 4, which we want to do now, go back and finish this up. Galatians 4. This is what Paul brings all that in with one verse. He just quotes the first verse of Isaiah 54, and he expects you and the Galatians to get it. He says, Jerusalem above is free. She is our mother, like Sarah. For it is written, rejoice, O barren one, who does not bear. Break forth, cry aloud, you who are not in labor. For the children of the desolate one will be more than those of the one who has a husband. And then he says in verse 20, he says, now you brothers, like Isaac, are children of the promise. And when he says, you brothers, he also means you sisters. But he says, you brothers, he's talking to the God-fearing Gentiles in Galatia. You God-fearing Gentiles. And Paul contrasts these God-fearing brothers, these God-fearing Gentile brothers, he contrasts them against those Gentiles who have undergone a legal halakhic conversion already. And to Paul, the God-fearing Gentile who remains a Gentile is a child of the promise that God made to Abraham. Why? Because what was the promise? All nations will be blessed in your seed. Not one nation will be blessed in your seed, but all nations, or another way to say that, all Gentiles. So the God-fearing Gentile believer is like Isaac, who was also a child of the same covenant promise. This is how Paul's mind is working. On the other hand, there's always another hand, the Gentile believers who undergo circumcision and go under the law for the sake of conversion to become Jewish are, Paul says, like Ishmael. Because they have, why? Because they've set this promise aside. They've set aside the promise that God made to Abraham about all nations being blessed in his seed. And they have adopted the natural means of becoming a son of Abraham, according to the flesh, literally removing some flesh, the normal way of becoming part of Abraham's family, which is becoming Jewish. It's just not so unusual as a miraculous birth. So in verse 29 he says, "But just as at that time he who was born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit, so it is also now." So also it is now. That's the way it is now. Wait a second. When did he who was born according to the flesh, Ishmael, persecute him who was born according to the Spirit, Isaac? When did this happen? Do you know when this happened? Yes. Genesis 21. Probably want to, just for fun, and it helps to stay awake if you actually go to the references. Genesis chapter 21, verse 8. It says, "And the child grew and was weaned." This is Isaac, baby Isaac. "The child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing, mocking. So she said to Abraham, 'Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be an heir with my son Isaac.'" That's what Paul's referring to when he says, "the son born according to the flesh persecuted him born according to the Spirit." Now, have you ever wondered how, you know, what was he mocking about? What was he making faces at Isaac? What was going on here? You know, I sometimes wondered, because Isaac's only about 3 years old. Ishmael here should be about, you know, I don't know, 16 or 17 or something like that. It's kind of a strange scene, but the sages wondered about this, and they made up a story, of course. Here's the story. I'm going to read it to you. This is right out of Genesis Rabbah. You can check on this. Genesis Rabbah 55:4. Ishmael said to Isaac, "I am more beloved than you are." He said, "I am more beloved than you are because I was circumcised at the age of 13. Isaac retorted, "I am more beloved than you are because I was circumcised at 8 days. I was only 8 days old." So Ishmael says, "I am more beloved than you are, because I could have protested at the age of 13, yet I did not. I did it willingly. I am more beloved than you are, since I was circumcised at the age of 13, but you were just a baby and could not refuse." So Ishmael can one-up Isaac, because unlike Isaac, he was 13 years old and he did it voluntarily. Isaac didn't have a choice in the matter. That's how he was mocking him and persecuting him, in, according to the sages in the Midrash. And Paul says, just as at that time, he who was born according to the flesh, you know, Paul knows all this Midrash too, you know. He who was born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit. So it is also now. Abraham had two sons. Those born according to the flesh are the Gentile believers in Galatia, who, like Ishmael, went through circumcision as adults, which you want to think twice about, you know, and became legally Jewish. And now they're criticizing those Gentile believers who have not taken that step, like Ishmael, taunting Isaac, the proselytes taunt the God-fearers and encourage them to convert. These are the influencers. We have found our influencers. The influencers are Gentiles who have already converted, and they are criticizing those Gentiles who have not gone through with the conversion. So Paul says, what does Scripture say? Cast out the slave woman and her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not inherit the son of the free woman. He quotes there in Galatians 4:30. He quotes Genesis 21. He quotes Sarah. Just as Sarah had Abraham send Hagar and Ishmael away, Paul urges these God-fearers in Galatia to reject the pressure and to reject the persuasion of those who have gone through conversion. Now, obviously, you can't kick them out of somebody else's synagogue. You know, so he's not. That's not the issue. That's not what he's suggesting, but he's saying, don't listen to them. The son of the slave woman is those who have become proselytes and to become legally sons of Abraham. And he says, they shall not inherit with you. That is, those who have remained Gentiles, those of you who have remained Gentiles, you're not going to share the inheritance, your inheritance, you're not going to share with those who have gone through this legal conversion. Now, he doesn't mean that the person who goes through conversion is going to go to hell or something, has lost their salvation. I don't think that's what he's saying. But I think what he's saying is you need to break from these people. You need to break from their dogma and from their doctrine. He says in verse 31, so brothers, we are not children of the slave, but of the free woman. And who's the free woman? It's Sarah. Therefore, Paul is saying, you Gentile God-fearers are B'nai Avraham. You are sons of Abraham. You are spiritual proselytes, is what he's saying. It's an analogy. Do you get it? The whole thing is just an analogy. It's a midrash. It's a parable. Don't take it too literally. It's not meant literally. It's an illustration, a sermon illustration. It's, you know, usually a parable or a midrash is only attempting to illustrate a single point. So you can't push these things too far. What is Paul's single point? His single point is that there are two different ways for a Gentile to become a Ben Avraham and part of Abraham's family. There is the normal way, according to the flesh, through circumcision and conversion. That's Ishmael. And then there's the abnormal way, the supernatural way, which is a matter of faith in the promise that God is going to bless all nations, not just one nation, but all nations in the seed of Abraham, the Messiah, and that through this, Abraham becomes the father of many nations. Gentiles who remain Gentiles, yet enter the family of Abraham spiritually by means of faith in Messiah. That's Isaac. That's what he means. That's all he was saying. Verse 29, he says, of chapter 3, if you look back, he said the exact same thing. He said the exact same thing. At the end of chapter 3, he said in verse 29, to the Gentiles, said, if you are in Messiah, then you are Abraham's seed, children. You're Abraham's children, you're his seed, heirs according to the promise. That's all he's talking about. So, to summarize, two types of proselytes, two types of B'nai Avraham, legal proselyte, spiritual proselyte. The one becomes a part of Abraham's family by circumcision and conversion, and the other through faith in Messiah. For that reason, we too call Gentiles Ben Avraham, Bat Avraham here. In fact, this is true. In most Messianic Jewish communities and congregations, when a Gentile boy comes up to the Bima for the first time for his bar mitzvah, they don't call it a bar mitzvah in most Messianic Jewish congregations. They call it a Ben Avraham. I kind of like that. It fits with Paul. Anyway, That's what this passage is about. I mean, that's what it means. It doesn't mean Old Testament against New Testament, Old Covenant against New Covenant. It doesn't mean Judaism bad, Christianity good. It does not mean Torah equals slavery, gospel equals freedom. It does not mean Jews, slaves, Christians, free. Any of those things, it doesn't mean any of that. It means that if you're a Jewish believer, it does mean this. It means if you are Jewish, you should be proud of that. You should be proud of being Jewish because you are a child of Abraham, legally, physically, spiritually. 1, 2, 3. And it means that if you're a Gentile believer, you too are part of the people, part of the family, spiritual son of Abraham. And that's remarkable. Child of the promise. Paul loves that stuff. Child of a promise that God made to Abraham so long ago. Shabbat shalom.
And learn from me. And find rest for your soul.